I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
How would you like this one to start?
No, we could just start. I liked that one where we just basically started. You started talking and I started talking and then it was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know, John, that it has yesterday, as we're recording this, was the 1 year anniversary of the shuttering of sfsignal.com.
I saw that. Maybe that's something we could talk about too.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, we've already started. I hit record, so.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, you surprised me. I can't believe it. I feel so caught off guard. Oh, no. The world's going to know the real me now.
Unguarded moment from John and Elio.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think that's something we should definitely talk about because this show really wouldn't exist without SF Signal.
No.
For people, I can't imagine there's too many people that if you listen to this show that don't know what SF Signal is. So tell people, just for the few people that maybe don't.
Well, SF Signal... As I've told the excuse me. Sorry, all of a sudden I'm like, I'm verklempt. SF Signal was when I was looking for, I was trying to find my niche. We had Shannon Lawrence on and we were talking a little bit about the author platform. That was a thing that went around for a little bit. And I don't know how much of it is still true. It's kind of interesting because I was at Pikes Peak Writers and, you know, the big time agents were saying that it wasn't really necessary and true anymore. But the concept was build a platform as an author, have a social media presence and a website presence and a following, however you can build a following. And then when you go to try to sell that first book, right, you can say, hey, I happen to have a following, you know, and I have a built-in audience of people who I talk to and regularly communicate with and who are fans and who might be willing to purchase whatever it is that I put out, you know, and they might be willing to support me as an artist and as an author. And that was sort of the concept in the early 2000s and on, you know, have this presence. And when I was looking at how to build my presence, I thought I wanted to be, you know, the blogger and have like the science fiction blog. And I thought, well, I'll be the book blogger and I'll write tons of book reviews because I read a lot. And I searched on Google and found out that, you know, everybody and their brother's cousin is a book blogger. And I thought, well, I'll find a niche and I'll try to be the, you know, the straight up just science fiction. And there was a ton of those. And I thought, well, I'll just be fantasy. And there was a ton of those. Urban fantasy. And there was a ton of those. And I just kept going down the list of, you know, where can I be a niche? Because that tends to be, especially in marketing, in communication, if you can be the niche person, find that little thing that you talk about that nobody else talks about and become a expert on the subject, right? And then you'll build an audience based on that. And everything I tried to find, someone was doing, to the point where a lot of the search engine results that were coming back was for this website called sfsignal.com. And they were a community blog, and it was all volunteer, you know, essentially. And it was just a place that, and it launched a ton of careers for people. Andrew Liptak, Justin Landon, Sarah Chorn, Paul Weimer, you and I, you know, it's just people got their start there by just writing about the things that they loved. And almost 10 years, I believe, almost 10 years, thousands, if not tens of thousands of posts, 60 something thousand people subscribed to the RSS feed for SF Signal. And it was a daily blog. They would put out 10 posts a day. Most of those written by John DiNardo in some shape or form. We had book reviewers who would write, you know, John would do a ton of posts and he would edit a ton of posts. And then I came in and edited a ton of posts and Kristen Centricelli came in and edited a ton of posts. And it just went on for, like I said, close to 10 years. And last year, John just had too many things pulling on him from too many directions. And it was such a grind to put that website out. And he just made the decision. He's like, I can't do this anymore. And he shut it down.
And I'm not sure. I think you might have, but just in case, he's talking about John DiNardo.
Yes.
I'm not sure if you said his last name.
I did not say his last name, but he is our bagel overlord. So
yes, we sometimes neglect to mention because we just assume people know, but not everyone would know, especially if you only started listening to our show recently. And John DiNardo and I used to get confused a lot because we both were John and we both had Italian sounding last names. And I don't know how many emails I've gotten over the years being like, hey, can we get this on SF Signal? I'm like, I don't know. Ask John DiNardo. That's not me. I'm not that guy. I'm associated with them, but that's not me.
And SF Signal built a huge community, and it was about community, and it was about the love of speculative fiction, SF. Right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought it was science fiction, but I believe it was speculative fiction. Mm. And, you know, it was all about boosting that signal and getting more people to read and love the things that we all love. And, you know, that's, I always talk about John did all of that from a place of love. He loves science fiction. He loves reading. He loves books to this day. And he just, you know, took that love and turned it into SF Signal, he and JP France. Mm-hmm. And I believe there was a third guy at the beginning and he dropped out. But yeah, they did that for 10 years. And tons of people rolled through that site over those years. And you and I met because of John DiNardo. I had a podcast that was All Things From My Brain. You had your, what was it called, John?
I was putting out my songs, and then in a way to fill in the gaps between when I was pulling out songs, I was putting out a podcast, and I think I just called it the Sci-Fi Songs podcast. I believe that's what it was. And I don't know how many episodes I did of that. Maybe 20. I don't even know if I made it that
far. I don't think I made it that far with All Things From My Brain.
Yeah, and it wasn't every week, because how I came in contact with SF Signal was that I was again, if you've only listened to the show for a year, I haven't really done music in a while. I mean, I still play music a lot, but I made a very conscious decision a few years ago. It scaled down, and then eventually got to the point, it's like, I don't want to do it like this anymore. I just decided that that's not where I wanted to put my energy. I just didn't feel like I wasn't enjoying it anymore. And I didn't really like who I'd become with it, but that's another whole discussion for another day. But I did stop doing it. I obviously still love science fiction and fantasy. That's what this show is all about. And I read more than I ever did. But in terms of writing music about it, I just didn't want to do it. But that's what I did at the time. I was very inspired by Jonathan Coulton, who did his thing a week wrote a lot of songs about nerdy interests, and I really liked him a lot just as a straight up singer songwriter. And I thought, well, I like all these books. What if I start writing some songs about these books and movies and things? And so my initial goal was to put a song out every week, which I found I could not do because it was very difficult to record and do all the parts. So it was once for really the first year, it was almost every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks. I put out a lot of songs in that first year.
And then Summer Glau.
Yeah, that was in there. So this how this all started with SF Signal was that it was fairly early on. I only had like maybe 5 songs out or something, and I had the Rachel Rosen song, which was, you know, the Blade Runner, you know,
Rachel Rose.
Yeah, and I had a couple other ones. I forget all the other ones, but that one was out, and a couple other ones. And DiNardo, it came across DiNardo's desk at some point, and not only did he put it in the tidbits, which was a daily thing, that he actually did a little post to be like, "Hey, this guy's writing songs about science fiction books. Like, check it out." And he like wrote a little bit about a couple of the songs and linked and. And I had I don't know if I had the Google alert or what have you, but it came back and I'm like, I turned to my phone. I'm like, I think this is kind of a big website. Like, I think this, because at the time that's what I was going for, but I didn't reach out to John. He just discovered it. And so when he did that, I reached out to him and emailed him thanking him for linking to my stuff. And we just started going back and forth. And he goes, you should do this. And what John DiNardo did was he wrote Weird Al style parody lyrics to Summer Breeze by Seals and Crofts. The Summer Breeze makes me feel fine. So he wrote those about Summer Glau, the actress who was in Firefly and then later on Dollhouse and a couple other things.
She's also an angel.
An angel, yeah. One episode of Angel. Yeah, so he wrote these parody, like way before he met me. That post was like a year or two old already. And so he's sort of like, wink, wink, you should do something like that. And I had gotten back to him like, well, I don't really do parodies. I'm not really interested in doing that, but I might do an original song. And so he didn't really say anything about it. And then like a week later, I had it finished. And I'm like, oh, you know what? That might have been my response. I may have just did it. And they're like, I don't do parodies, but I did this. And I wrote like a whole different song based on those lyrics, which he was very excited about. And then that was on my first album. And that was another kind of, you know, in minor terms, kind of a virally song for me prior to like the George R. R. Martin song being like a really big one later on. But
at some point you sent me like your CD.
Yeah, well, I actually had a physical CD for that one. Like, I printed up copies of that, and I think you were ended up reviewing that CD.
Yeah, which you was sent to me, and you're like, hey, you know, John DiNardo or something said, you know, you might be interested in this, and, you know, I'd really appreciate a review if you wanted to write one. And
yeah, well, you like, did a podcast review of it. You, like, went down every song and did it, which was very nice of you. And so that's how I got associated with it.
A stitch of clothing found inside. Malice tipped off, wondering about the doctor. I don't care, cause I'm feeling alright. See the tree branch lying on the cool deck. She picks it up, maybe thinks it's fun. Snap us back to now, see the world. Up now, but River's got a gun. Summer bound, she makes me feel fine. I can't shake her image from my mind. Summer bound, she makes me feel fine. I can't shake her image from my mind. She makes me feel fine. I can't shake her image from my mind. Summer Glow, she makes me feel fine. I can't shake her image from my mind. She makes me feel fine. I can't shake her image from my mind. Summer Glow, she makes me feel fine. I can't shake her image from my mind. Summer Glow, oh Summer Glow, oh Summer Glow, she's an image in my mind. Summer Glow.
Yes. And then Patrick and I, because Patrick and I are both music fans too, I think we started sort of connecting over that. And we were both doing our own little podcasts. And I had this idea in the back of my mind for months before I even presented it to Patrick, because I was so busy at the time. I'm like, I don't know if I want to commit to anything else. And finally, I'm just like, you know what? Forget it. I'm going to. And I said, like, hey, you're doing a podcast. I'm doing a podcast. We should do one together, you know, because both of ours are solo podcast.
And I wanted to totally do an SF Signal podcast, and you were like, oh, I don't know, you know, they're a big site, and maybe we need to prove to them that we can do this, you know. I think we need to have more experience before we go to them, and you know, and your boss said something, and he called you a functional nerd, and I think we should do functional nerds.
Yeah, so that's how that got started. Yeah, so the Functional Nerds was sort of a resume builder to do an SF Signal podcast, which then that's exactly what happened. And I was on the SF Signal podcast for the first, I don't know how long. It wasn't very long.
You were like, no, screw this noise. I'm done. This is too much. I can't do this. Because we were going, like, I would get home and we would start recording. And by the time we were done recording, it was like 3:30 in the morning your time or some ridiculous
thing. Well, it wasn't that bad, but it was like 11.
Yeah.
11. It was too late. I couldn't do it that late. And that was also the time I was like recording in my garage at the old, and it was cold. And yeah. I'm just like, I can't do this.
But,
and
especially, it was all due to John DiNardo.
Yes, you know? And that's the thing. So, and then the SF Signal podcast was very successful. Won a Hugo Award, and
SFSignal.com won a Hugo. Actually, won two Hugo Awards.
Yeah.
So you know they won the two Hugo Awards for best fanzine, one Hugo Award for best fan cast, and then you know John just you know picked up the mic and held it out in a fist and said boom and dropped it.
Yeah, that's what he does. That's his move. That's what
end
he likes
top,
to do.
End on a high.
This will be the one they don't listen to because they'll be like, John DiNardo, who's that?
Yeah, and as you said, Patrick, I think this is where, to this day, so many of the people in the online community, that's how many of us met. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's how many. And I just went out last week or two weeks ago with Rob Bedford who wrote a lot, and that's actually got to think because he posted something about it the other day too, about you know SF Signal shutting down a year ago, and I just saw Rob the other day, and you know, and there's a bunch of local guys here, and it's something that kind of keeps going, and you know, I saw when you know, because DiNardo is still nice enough to usually when we put a new episode out, he'll still tweet it out. And I think the SF Signal
he's still doing a presence on Twitter and Facebook under SF Signal. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And
he just isn't doing the daily blogging anymore.
Yeah. So he still like will throw out links to all the different things. And yeah, he's still got a big file. I think he's feel like he's got like 20,000 Twitter followers or more. But it's I don't know, when you're in those numbers, that's always like, oh, that's
pretty huge. And you know, we talk about the different things that were, you know, Functional Nerds came about because of John DiNardo and SF Signal. The Three Horsemen podcast came about because of the SF Signal podcast, because we had Christy Sherish a couple weeks ago, and she filled in for me when life was really, really difficult and I could not do any episodes. And at the same time, John, Jeff and I'm totally blanking on Fred's name. I don't know why I'm blanking on Fred's name, but Fred, you know, they wanted to fill in too on SF Signal on the podcast, and you know, they wanted to help out, and so they did a couple of fill-in episodes that ended up being the template for the Three Horsemen podcast. You had things like, you know, for a little while Sarah Chorn's column, you know, was born and ran there at SF Signal, and I think now she has her own website dedicated to that.
Right.
And it's just all these things kind of happened because SF Signal was there, Grasping for the Wind. You remember John Ottinger?
Yes, of course. You know,
John was a contributor at SF Signal for a long time. Andrew Liptak was a contributor at SF Signal for a long time, and you just had all these people who just kind of came in and cut their teeth. And started blogging and really writing on SF Signal, and then, you know, got jobs and got columns at different places. I got my Kirkus column because I was doing stuff at SF Signal. And they needed someone to do graphic novels. So
I see a lot of folks, former SF Signal writers, who do the Barnes & Noble blog.
Yeah, they've gone to Barnes & Noble. They've gone to Tor.com. They're at Kirkus. They're at all these other sites and still writing and going strong. And I just bring it back. It all came from SF Signal.
Yeah. So it's something that I think we still mourn.
Because when I realized, and this episode's going out weeks afterwards, but on the day of when I saw that post from Rob Bedford, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I mean, it just was a gut punch. And I thought about it for a second. I'm like, wow, this wound is still raw and it still hurts.
And, you know, we should say, you know, and I think Patrick sort of mentioned it already, but it was so much work for John that no one, well, I shouldn't say no one, but I think anybody that was kind of close to him in any way, everybody understood.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody knew the gargantuan effort that went into doing it the way that he did. Because in my mind, it was a site similar to your IO9s and your Tor.coms, but it was completely independent. It was not, you know, IO9 is part of Gizmodo and Tor has the backing of Tor. You know, there are the people that run and write those blogs, they're part of a company. Like that's their job, or that's part of their job at least.
There was no pay. There was no benefits. The benefits were you were writing for SF Signal.
SF Signal did run some ads at least the last few years. I'm not sure how long they did, but that they did not make really hardly anything off of that. I mean, I think if anybody thinks that a ton of money is made off of ads, like it's not. And I think basically that was sort of a cost covering thing, for John. So I he certainly did not make money off of that, or nothing significant, at least anyway. And for the amount of hours he put into it, he had a full-time job and a family, and he spent a lot of time on that.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a lot of work, and he did it because he loved it. And at one point it was too much work and he wasn't loving it anymore. And I think a lot of people probably were like, well, why not, let someone else run it? And I think he did address this.
He tried with me. He tried with Kristen. It was so much work. I've said before, I don't know how he did it. I have no idea how he did it. Mm-hmm. People ask me all the time, how do you do everything that you do? Because I have a lot of stuff going on. I have a full-time job. I have mom, with Alzheimer's. I am writing and trying to get books out there. I'm doing Kirkus. I'm doing this podcast. I'm doing a lot of stuff, and people always say, how do you do it? And I joke and I'm like, well, sleep is for the weak and caffeine is your friend. But even with all that, it burned me out very quickly trying to do SF Signal, trying to do what John did for 9 years, right? However long he did it before he started asking people to come in and kind of do help. It burned me out. Kristen, I know, busted her ass doing that for a year or something like that. I don't remember exactly how long she was doing it. And it was a lot of work, a lot of work. Now, to dovetail into other stuff that we wanted to talk about, what I learned from John is invaluable, including how important community is and how important it is to foster community. And I learned that from him very, very early on. And the few times that we were able to be at the same place at the same time tended to be like a couple of World Cons and a World Fantasy. And what we started doing at Worldcon was having SF Signal meetups where we would post that we were going to do, and it was hilarious because John and I would go back and forth and, trying to find a place, in a town that we're not familiar with, and we're using Google Maps and we're doing little searches, and like what's around where we're going to be, and trying to find places. And at one, I think in San Antonio, we had our meetup in the food court, of the mall that was right next to the convention center kind of thing. And so, we did that, and it was all about introducing people to other people and fostering that sense of community. And you and I, we were going to talk about a little bit about Pikes Peak Writers Conference. I do that there, and I do that at Mile High Con. I try to bring people together. I'm almost always involved at Mile High Con with the Writers Mixer. At Pikes Peak Writers, I intentionally sought out certain people that I wanted to come to Pikes Peak Writers and got them to do workshop proposals and helped them, kind of customize those and edit those and go back and, offer things, because I really wanted them to come to Pikes Peak Writers. They'd never had that experience. And they were thrilled by that and thrilled by the positive experience of Pikes Peak Writers. And to tie it all together, it was funny because I think it was either Pat Smythe or it may have been JT. There was this whole thing about music where one night Kevin Hearn, Mike Braff, and myself and a ton of other people went off into this corner of the conference area, and there's always a grand piano, and they had shoved it way down this hall where it normally isn't. And James from Pennsylvania was kind of playing songs and on the piano we're trying to, and I'm trying to help, and Kevin's asking for certain things, and we're all singing together. And then I'm just mentioning, you know, all these different songs and different things. And someone just looked at me and said, you know, you and John Anilio are perfect.
Wow.
You guys love the same songs. You always talk about music. You just seem, he's like, that was just a match made in heaven, which wow. I thought was amazing. And
yeah,
and again, that never would have happened if it hadn't been for John DiNardo, you know, building community.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, he taught me that, and I've gone out and I try to build community and I try to bring people together. And I will say that a listener of the podcast, I'm not going to say his name because he didn't give me permission to, but on the last day of conference, a gentleman walked up to me and he handed me a copy of my book and he says, can I get you to sign this? I'm like, sure. And he's like, by the way, I'm here because you talk about Pike's Peak writers on the podcast. I listened to your podcast and you kept talking about it and it just made me want to give it a shot. And that's why I'm here, and I've had a fantastic time.
That's awesome. That's really great. And that brings up something else. One of the things Patrick and I, as people know, we batch record and we do a bunch of episodes in a row that then go out throughout the month. And one of the things that we've talked about the last bunch of times, and it's always hard to do this, but I think we're kind of getting into a position now, is we want to go to cons more. Patrick has, over the past bunch of years, has gone to way more cons than I have. And you always do Pike's Peak and you do Mile High and you always go to WorldCon. And, you know, so you always hit at least those three. I haven't gone to a con at all in a while. The last one was the one that we did together in Chicago, and that's over 2 years ago now. And we've been talking sort of off air about, you know, what can we do to get the word out about the podcast more? And we talk about going to cons. And I think, well, there's a couple of thoughts that I have about this. Number one, you know, you're talking about community building. And I had mentioned how I don't really do music anymore. And I'm really happy with that, because everyone probably goes through their, you know, their journey with this. And I think if you have some project or some creative thing that you're doing, whether it's writing a book or what have you, there's this balance of, well, I want to get the word out about this. And, you know, the problem with doing that is you can come off as very selfish or using people. And we've certainly run across people that are like that, that are just like really in your face about trying to buy their book and are not cool about it at all.
And that we only hear from when they have something out. And
right. After that, right.
We don't hear anything from them, no matter how much we talk to them.
and I feel like everybody has their own sort of battle with that. However, I know, looking back, I wanted to get the word out about my music, and eventually I just really didn't like that about myself. And that's one of the reasons I even stopped doing it. So at this point, I'm much more about, you know, we do the show because I like doing the show, but like, I don't have any agenda because I don't have, you know, we started the show in the beginning. Part of it was like, well, I have my music that I want to get out there and you want to get known as a writer. So maybe this is a way we can do it. And I think that was the initial spark. But I think after a while we, you know, realized that it's just nice to be part of this community. It's nice to talk to these, it's nice to have this experience of talking to someone that's out there doing it in whatever their way is. My wife always says after every recording session, she's like, oh, I always like when you're doing that, when you're done, because you always come off as being like very charged up and very engaged, and just, you know, even if you're stressed out and you're like, oh man, I just don't really feel like doing, you know, 3.5 hours of recording now. I had a tough week. I don't know if that's really how I want to spend my Saturday, but you know, she's like, you're always charged up after it. Yeah, so it doesn't matter.
It's the post-con high.
Yeah. So, you know, to me, that's what it's about. And we want to get out there and start doing that, because Well, for a lot of reasons, but one of them is anytime we have done it, we've always had such a good experience with mm-hmm. it. And I think we're both at a place now where we can do a part of you is that you now have a book out, and that, you know, that's the way you can help spread the word about your book and the podcast. And for me, I'm sort of ready to do it now too, because, and I've never hidden anything for, I don't think I get too personal all the time, but if something comes up, I always do mention it. But, you know, I've been in a situation over the past bunch of years where we live in one town in New Jersey, and we moved here specifically to send my son to school. My son's autistic. So we found like the best school district to send it to. And we've been here for almost 4 years now, and he's doing great. And we are very happy with our decision, but we actually owned a place in another town about a half hour from here. And we really moved here like kind of like in the middle of the night. We sort of escaped from one place and we moved into here, and we didn't have a big plan other than to send him to school here. And unfortunately, because the housing market was the way it was, we weren't able to sell it. So we rented it. We've been renting it for the past 3 or 4 years. And now we sold it. We just sold it this past week as the time we're recording it. And it is a huge financial load, because even though we had renters, we had tenants, they did not cover the whole mortgage and everything. Right. We lost hundreds of dollars every month on that place.
So I, you know, and I've said this off air before, John, and the fact that you and your wife like didn't even hesitate, you just did that, you know, to give your son a better experience and have him in a school where, you know, he can learn and thrive and grow is absolutely amazing. And, you know, I have huge respect for both of you, and you haven't gone all the way down the road. You know, tell people like, yeah, you lost money. Tell people about the actual place you're living right now.
Oh, well, we live in a one bedroom apartment, the three of us.
It's tiny.
Yeah, it's a tiny place. And we moved here because we didn't know, like we heard it was a good school, but we didn't know. So we're like, well, let's just go into a one bedroom, because the town that we're in, it's actually pretty expensive to live here. So it's pretty expensive to live in this one bedroom apartment, but it's less expensive than if it was a two bedroom apartment or a three bedroom. So we were just like, well, let's do that first. And then if we like it, we'll move into a bigger place. Well, we haven't moved into a bigger place because we've had this our mortgage to worry about. We're just like, let's just keep our monthly expenses mm-hmm. as low as possible, because, you know, our tenants can flake at any time. And then we got to cover both, and we can only do that. So it's really been limiting. And it's one of the reasons why I haven't gone to cons, is because it's like, all right, you know, going to a con costs, you know, especially if you have to fly there or something, you know, it's.
Yeah, I've always talked about it, you know, Worldcon for me is usually about $1,100.
Yeah. And so, that's a big one. That's longer. And sometimes it's a further, you know, a flight that you have to take. But even the ones that are only on the weekend, you know, look, if let's say you don't even have to fly there, just getting a hotel room and meals, it's going to be $500, you know, but you know, so let's say you can drive there. So between gas, tolls, hotel, meals, you know, you're looking at $500 minimum. Now, if you got to fly there, and if the hotel rooms are more, then you're talking, as Patrick said, more like $1,000, $1,100, something like that. So we don't mind. Now, we did the one in Chicago because we were guest of honor. And that's the best thing in the world, because they pay for you to go.
Capricorn, yes.
Capricorn, yeah. And if Capricorn wants to have us back.
And they had cannoli, so.
Yeah, and they have cannoli, and that was great. We had a great experience there. And if anybody else listening to the podcast, if you do any work at your con and you want to have Functional Nerds as guests of honor, we would be delighted to come. Absolutely. But even beyond that, we would like to come to some other cons, because I love that community and I want to get back into it, because I was going to a lot of cons when I was trying to get my music out there. I was going to local ones. I was flying out to different ones. You know, I'd go to 4 or 5 a year, and in the past bunch of years, I haven't gone at all, and I really want to do it. And I want us to do it as a podcast, and I want to go help Patrick, you know, promote his book. And I want us to get out there and spread the word and to just help build a community, because I think that's really what it's about. And that's what I get out of it now too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So yeah, so that's one of the things that we certainly want to get going on. I mean, we have a lot of ideas, and as a Patrick and I both, as you know, we don't mean to, and I hope it never comes off like this. I hope it comes out as more of a positive thing, but because everybody has their challenges in life. But like, you know, as I said, my son's autistic. Patrick's mom has Alzheimer's. Like, we're dealing, besides normal day job family stuff, we have that extra layer that adds a lot of demands on our time, and it gets harder to do these things. But it's something that we want to do more. And we always have all these different ideas, and the Patreon's been great, but we've talked about off air about the Patreon too. It's like, well, you know, we had all these levels in the beginning and I don't know where we're going with that. So what should we do with that? So these are things that Patrick and I are in the process now. Again, we're getting to the point where we're finally sort of where I'm finally having some bandwidth to start thinking about that stuff, because basically the way that we do the show, a little like let you look behind the curtain, is Patrick has his jobs that he does. I have the jobs that I do. And I think we work really hard at doing that. But to go beyond that has been difficult for a while because of all the various other things that we have going on in our lives. And now I know for me, I'm getting to the point where it's like, I want to start looking into doing this more, like really trying to grow it a little bit.
And then there's always the things that you don't expect to happen, John. Mm-hmm. There's the unexpected things. So one thing I wanted to throw out there, we talk about, you know, the stuff that we do and the work that we do to make this podcast happen, and trying to go beyond it can be difficult. At Pike's Peak Writers, I pitched a book, a novel, to a literary agent. And what I was expecting was what I've gotten in the past from different people at Pike's Peak Writers, which is, you know, send me the first chapter, send me the first 20 pages or something like that. She took a look at my query letter and she made a couple of marks and she's like, you know, I like this query letter. And because part of the pitch session is they actually critique your letter and tell you what they think you should do as far as a query letter. So she made a few marks on there, changed up and said, move this here, move that there. And she says, but other than that, it's great. And then she took out a card and she said, yeah, send me the full manuscript. So now, like, and then I asked her, I said, well, what's your timetable? Like, when do you think you're going to be ready to start seeing things after Pike's Peak Writers? She says, oh, about 2 weeks. 2 weeks after, you know, go ahead and send it to me. I'm like, okay, great. So, you know, I walked out of there and I went, okay, now I've got 2 weeks to polish up this damn manuscript. I thought for sure she would say, you know, send me the first chapter in a couple of weeks. And then I would do that. And then it would take her a couple of weeks to you know, go through it. She would send me an email and say, you know, go ahead and maybe send me, she'd either reject it or say, you know, send me the full manuscript. So I figured I had like minimum 5 to 6 weeks to do a polish on this manuscript before I would have to actually send it to her. No, she liked it immediately and she wants it within 2 weeks. And now I'm sitting here just scrambling to polish every free moment of my time. You know, we talked about stealing time to write. You know, every day at lunch, I'm there with my laptop working on this novel. Every when I get home, I spend some time with mom and you know, I try to talk to her a little bit and we watch some TV and different things. And then, you know, eventually around 9 o'clock, she goes up to bed. And when she goes to bed, I'm sitting there at my desk working on this novel. So you never know when these things are gonna happen, you know, and what's gonna come up.
Yeah, and you gotta be ready for it. But that's very exciting news. I know
it's
great. Kind of
yeah, I mean it's exciting and terrifying all at the same time.
Now I'm assuming this is a different series than
it is. You have, yes, this is my space opera.
Oh, okay. So now, have you ever put out anything independently in this world, or is this a totally different?
This is totally different. Totally different. I've never put anything independent out in this particular world.
That's awesome. That's really good. Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. I'm very, to loop it back to what I said, I feel so happy and, you know, / proud of the things that you've been accomplishing lately, because that was kind of part of the reason we started the podcast was, you know, that was, and I like that it happened organically and gradually, and it didn't come because I know at this, you know, for the past bunch of months when we start the show, I introduce you and I mention your book because I don't know. I figure that's, I don't know a better way to put this, but I feel like we've sort of earned that because we haven't really, especially in the past couple of years, because I haven't been promoting anything. And like, you never really, you promote going to a con, or you might promote something little here and there, but it's never was beating your head over it. And I feel like, look, we have, you know, people listening, like they should know that you have a book out. So
and I appreciate that. Yeah. Because you're right. I'm probably not going to be the guy who talks about my own stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think that's always the better way to do it, too, you know, to, you know, if someone else talks it up for you. So I'm like your hype man. I'm like,
Well, and, you know, we're batch recording 4 episodes today. And then I'm going to get out of Functional Nerds mode, and then I'm going to go on Beyond the Trope, because they asked me to come on their show to talk about my book. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are other people who are helping out and asking, you know, those kinds of things, which is awesome. And I'm very appreciative of it.
Yeah. And I think that's, I don't know. I mean, authors are, it's interesting being in this world for the time that I've been through the podcast. I'm not sure how it always works. I feel like it's a slow build for most people. You know, they get a novel published here, they get a novel published there, they do short stories. I feel like sometimes then you have some people that, like, their first novel, for whatever reason, Tor or whoever's putting it out, just really puts a ton of muscle behind spreading the word. And I suppose if it's good enough, then a lot of people read it and it gets good word of mouth, and then you have kind of a hit. But I feel like that's really rare to sort of hit that lottery. I feel like most people that end up having good careers, long careers, really have been slugging it out for a while. One of the friends, one of our friends of the show, Delilah S. Dawson, you know, so if people saw, they announced a bunch of new Star Wars books, and Delilah is writing the Captain Phasma book. Mm-hmm. So that's like a big deal. That's a big deal to write a...
And I think I'm allowed to say this, hopefully. But I also found out, so at Pikes Peak Writers, Kevin Hearn was talking about how he was, you know, he's writing 3 series and, you know, he's trying to keep track of that. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, okay, The Iron Druid Chronicles, his new Plague of Giants, what's the 3rd one?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, finally I asked him, I'm like, Kevin, what's the 3rd book? What's the 3rd series? And he got this grin and he's like, well, that's something I'm working on with Delilah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, so I wonder what that is.
Awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. So my point is that I feel like Delilah has been on a big journey, you know, because we've been friendly with her online for quite a few years now, and I feel like she was someone that maybe put some things out independently first, and
she did the hybrid thing. Yeah, she's all over the place.
Yeah. And does some short stories and does some novels with various publishers. And, you know, now, you know, she still has all that going on. She's not stopped that, but now she's got a Star Wars book. That's a way higher profile gig.
Didn't she do The Perfect Weapon?
She did that, which was excellent. I read that and enjoyed that a lot. And so I guess, you know, they liked what she did for that. So now she's doing the Phasma book, which is such a perfect fit to have someone like Delilah flesh that character out. And, you know, get, because I think everybody was, whatever your, one of those sort of universal criticisms of The Force Awakens, although most people liked it, was like, boy, we really wanted more Phasma in there. Like, she was like all over the trailer and she has very little screen time on the actual movie. So to have a whole novel devoted to her is exciting. And I'm excited to read Delilah do it. So.
The other thing I want to throw out there, John, yeah, and I'm excited for Delilah too. And I guess maybe that she's moving to Florida.
Oh, I don't,
I saw on there. She's been talking about that quite a bit online. But, so Mike Braff is an editor at Del Rey, and he's Kevin Hearn's editor. And he was also at Pikes Peak Writers, and he was an awesome guy. He's a sweet guy. And to see him and Kevin actually did a world building workshop in this part of the Thursday prequel, and they used a whiteboard and they built a world on the whiteboard from the tectonic plates up.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fascinating to watch them do that. And there was a point where they were at the bar and I walked up and I said, hey guys, how's it going? They're like, oh good, you know, blah 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 blah. And I said, Kevin, I'm struggling because I'm trying really hard not to fanboy on you about the Iron Druid Chronicles and specifically Oberon. And I told him that, you know, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but Oberon is absolutely my favorite character from those books. And second is Owen. So it's not even Atticus. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Owen and I love Oberon. And I said, and I especially love Luke Daniels doing those voices. And I said, I used to drive people here at Pikes Peak Writers nuts because I would walk around doing the Oberon voice all the time. And that opened it up for me to be able to do the Oberon voice for them. And I just looked at him and I went, Atticus, I've been a good puppy. I've been such a good puppy. Can I have a sausage? And Braff looked at me and he looked at Kevin. He's like, fire Luke Daniels. Hire him.
Sweet. So you got a gig out of this. Awesome.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Oh, that's cool. So you had a good time with Kevin Hearn. That's
Yeah,
that's, you know what? I don't know.
He's a fun guy.
99% of the people I've met, I've loved. But I do get a little gun shy of meeting these people now a little bit. Cause I'm just like, I liked your book. I want to like you as a person. And I realize like, that's okay. I can like your book and we don't have to be pals. I think for a long time doing the show and other things, I was like, I want to be pals with all these people. I'm just like, nah, don't be that way. Like if it ends up being that way, that's cool. But so I don't know. I know you like his books a lot. So I would hate for you to be like, oh man, he was a jerk.
No, he was wonderful. And I've said it a couple of times now. On Saturday night, we sat there singing stupid songs together.
There's nothing better than that.
There's nothing like bonding with someone over singing, you know, Don't Stop Believing and Faithfully and then Fly Me to the Moon. You know, we're singing all these weird songs and stuff. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. He's a great guy. He's so much fun. And he will not fly to or through Chicago's O'Hare Airport.
Mm.
He's just had so many bad experiences. He will not fly there. And so during one of the big lunches that we have where we bring up all the keynotes and they have them sit there and we ask him questions and kind of talk to them a little bit. One of the things that we asked him was, you know, why? And he's like, I've just had horrible, horrible experiences there. And they said, okay, well, if you had to fly from, and it was like two cities that were like this far apart, like really, really, really close to each other. And you had to fly there. And the only way to fly there was either through a connecting flight at Chicago's O'Hare Airport, or you had to first fly to Anchorage, Alaska, and then, you know, turn around and come back in order to get there. Which would you do? And he's like, I would take the Anchorage flight. And they're like, well, what if it was, you know, you were the Anchorage and you're sitting next to someone like a crying baby and someone with a really bad rash. And he sits there and he goes, well, tell me more about the rash. And I was cracking up. He's hilarious. And he's a great instructor and a great teacher as well. Mm. And that's actually where he started, was as a teacher.
Oh,
he was a teacher in Arizona.
Cool.
And he and his wife both, I believe. So, you know, he has that presence as an instructor as well. So yeah, just a great fun guy.
Cool. Well, we have to try to get him on the podcast.
I have already suggested that to the gentleman who schedules all of our guests for the show.
Yes. Yes. Well, I will put in my word to him as well. All right. Well, I think that is putting us up to about 45 minutes,
yeah,
I think, at this point. So, all right, everybody. So, Patrick, anything you want to end on?
You've been very kind. You keep telling people to buy my book, and I appreciate that. I consigned books at the Pikes Peak Writers bookstore during the conference and sold out.
Nice.
And had people coming up to me during the book signings and having me actually sign the book as well, which is also always, you know, really fun. That was
cool.
My first official book signing.
That is awesome. That's amazing. I'm happy to hear that. And the book he's talking about is Into the Fire. It's the Sam Cain book one, and you can get that on Amazon or any of the online book things. Yep. I have not spotted it.
It's in BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com. I believe it's in the Kobo.
I do look for it when I'm out and about. Haven't spotted it yet, but there's only a couple bookstores by me. So hopefully one day we'll see it there too. But go get Patrick's book. And if you dig the show, become one of our Patreon backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. For the people who already do it, thank you very much. It really does mean so much to us. So if you're not backing us, consider. It would help us even more. The more people we have, it's not even about the money, although that helps. It's like the more people that back us, the more we feel like we're doing this for somebody, the more we feel like the bigger community, link it back to the community, the more people that we know are part of this community, the more we want to work at it, the more we want to put into it. We get tweets sometimes because we are so invested in the community. I feel like I knew everybody that listened to the show early on. And nowadays we'll get tweets from people and I'm like, I don't even know this person. And they listen, like, I'm always sort of surprised by that, but it's like, well, duh, we have this many numbers. I don't know all those people, but it's always surprising. And I'm always delighted and ecstatic when someone reaches out to us on Twitter or whatever.
I have the stock joke for the in-person meetings at cons, like the gentleman who walked up to me at the signing table and said, "Hey, I listened to the podcast." I'm like, "Oh, you're the other one."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's what it feels like in the beginning. But I know it's more than that now, and it's so. Anyway, so but if you're one of those people, consider becoming one of our backers because it helps, and we know you're part of the community then. And hopefully, we'll be. Patrick and I will sit down and try to make that Patreon even better. Offering whatever kind of levels and things, because we had our first run at it and we did it, and I think we've learned like what works and what doesn't, and we're going to try to figure it out to make it more fun and offer you more. And so we're going to be in the process of figuring that out.
And plus technology has changed. Like when we first did that, one of the things we talked about doing was streaming the video, and Google has completely hosed us on that.
So that's the thing. We had all these like sort of higher tier things, and some of them, just as Patrick said, technically didn't end up working out because the technology changed, or they just held back some of the features. Some we just thought people would like and I don't think they really care about certain aspects of it. So we want to figure that out so we can, maybe it's even just tightening it up and not offering five different things, but offering maybe two things that are really cool that we can do. So we're going to figure that out, and hopefully, make it even more enticing to back us because it helps and it means a lot to us. So there you go. All right, everyone. Have a great week. We will see you next time.
And scene.
Hello, hello. John D here, resident blogger at SF Signal. The smell of it. Oh, my God. It smells like Wookiees in here. What the hell? Hi-o.
We started in 2003. Kind of on a lark. My buddy JP, he walked into my office. We were coworkers, he walks into my office, and the blogs were the new thing. They were like, everybody had a blog. Everybody was getting blogs. They were just becoming popular. And he's like, "Hey, we should start a blog." I'm like, "Dude, nobody cares what I had for lunch." And he's like, "No, we'll do it on like science fiction or something. We both like science fiction." I'm like, "Yeah. We could try. Go ahead, get it all set up, and I'll do it. Sure, whatever. I'll try it. I'll try my hand at it. We'll see." And then, because I was kind of like this reluctant blogger in the beginning, and then until I started blogging, and then it was like, oh, this is somehow a lot of fun, and for no other reason than because it was stuff I published was on the web. We had no readers. It was basically a way for our small circle of friends at our job to read the stuff and talk about the stuff that we like. It's just a different format of communication than email. That's really what it was. Hey, I just put a post out here on this new book. Go check it out, to our friends in email. And that's kind of how it started. And then once it started, it was like, kind of started it was about building other content and stuff like that. But, oh God, what is it? The site would be so much cooler if they just spelled everything correctly.
Fred, who is also a member of the Three Horsemen podcast, a new podcast.
Oh, what's that? SF.
It's the Three Horsemen. You don't know about that?
I haven't heard about that yet. No. Is that new?
It's newish, and I did the theme song to that one too.
Wow, they never did their first episode.
That joke is I don't know if it's not long running enough to be as funny as it is mean. You do that with Skippy and Fanny, and you do that with the Three Horsemen. these poor guys are putting all this hard work in, and you're like, what? Never heard of it. Tell them about. Oh God, I'm 11 minutes into the podcast. I haven't started yet.
Damn it, I forgot you're recording. Dude, no.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.
Yeah. Well, that was fun.